Continuing the great tradition at the Revelation series, this is the Revelation series. That's what I meant by continuing the great tradition. Yes, this has become a tradition just about 5 days a week here from my laundry room studio. This hasn't been my first studio, of course. I started in the bunker in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Moved on to my studios in Canton, Ohio, my boyhood home. Well, not the exact home, my boyhood town, let's put it that way. And now from Fort Lauderdale, broadcasting from the laundry room. Back way before all this happened, I used to walk 8 miles a day, as I've been telling you, trying to diffuse some of the frustration in handling this life in general, and I recommend doing something with a repetitive motion. You can run, which is nice. You can jump rope, watch the laundry cam with this kind of motion. You can swim, you could do this. Or I suppose you could just sit in a chair and do all these things. You could do this, sit in a chair, just do this. But it's a little more fun to do this in the water or to do this with a jump rope or to run. It's the repetitive motion that has a zen-like effect on you. And I recommend this to everyone trying to cope. And we all try to cope every day with the madhouse. And it is a madhouse, a veritable madhouse that is this world. And I've been fighting this professionally. I hate to call this a profession. Well, in the strictest sense, it is a profession. I profess a profound faith and trust in God that was given to me by Him, and it is my joy, not only a joy, but it's my need to testify every day, practically, really, to the grace of God and to what He has done for me, what He has done to the world, and to be a voice in the darkness, a light in the darkness, a voice in the void, a light in the darkness. The darkness is this world. Gross darkness covers the peoples. That's a scripture verse. Don't know where it is naturally, but it's a scripture verse. And gross darkness covers the people. This is why Jesus said to us, "You are the light of the world." We're the light. We're living letters. We are an expression of the grace of God. This is why it is important for us to be gracious to our enemies. It's important to be nice to people, at least to their faces. You can talk bad about them behind the scenes, but to their faces, try to be nice to them. So there I was walking past a Mennonite house every day. What year was this? It was probably around 1999, possibly 2000. Now, the Mennonites, oh my goodness, they put these signposts in order to make themselves feel superior and to damn anyone who would dare walk by. And the sign at this particular Mennonite yard, located at the 2 mile mark of my daily round, had for months read, you ready for this? I gave this to you yesterday, but this is what I was looking at for 2 months. God shows mercy to the merciful. Yes, and that's true enough as it stood. But this was an old covenant deal between God and humans. And this is the one thing that the Mennonites and the Amish and any religious person loves. They love this old covenant deal. You do this, I'll do this between God and humans, which is void of the present grace. You have to ask yourself, what has God done lately? Yes, lately. Otherwise, you'll be stuck in an old covenant, Old Testament pattern that God has since broken out of. And He did that back then for a purpose, to prove something. But you see, these religious types never learned the lesson that the law came so that the transgressions would increase. Yes. So every time I see a condemnatory sign in a churchyard or in an Amish yard, a Mennonite yard, or from anybody who tries to make me behave myself, I run away as soon as I can. I get the heck out of there because I know that the law came that the transgressions would increase. That's Romans 5:20. And it's a recipe for disaster. People say, "Martin, my kids, they just won't behave themselves." And I ask them why. What's happening? Well, we go to church every day. Stop right there. And of course, at their church, the Ten Commandments are on the wall, and the law of God is put forward to children, and adults can't do it, let alone children. You're training your child to become a criminal, to force the Ten Commandments on him or her. Stop doing it, please. So the question I wanted answered from this Mennonite sign, I wanted it from the horse's mouth, as it were, which is pretty literal in the case of the Mennonites. They still get pulled around by horses, which is perfect. Why wouldn't you if you're trying to obey the Ten Commandments that God brought down Mount Sinai to Moses back in the year, 2000 BC or whatever. Yeah, why wouldn't you ride a horse? Perfect. Perfect. Build a fire, ride a horse, wear a loincloth. It's all perfect. This is a question I would ask. Why isn't anything ever mentioned about the grace of God? And along that line, my question will be, what happens to the unmerciful? That's the logical question that follows from a sign that says God is, what does it say? God shows mercy to the merciful, shows mercy to the merciful. It's all contingent. It's all based on performance. It's like God sitting there and waiting with his arms folded to see what you're going to do. My big question was, what happens to the unmerciful? And I often dreamed of asking this as I walked past this place in my fantasy. I had a fantasy. You have to do something when you're walking 8 miles. My fantasy was that I would knock on the door, on the Mena door of the Mennonites, in search of some kind of sequel to their sicko sign. In my fantasy, a plain woman answers the door. Her head is covered, of course. She is aproned, and she's surrounded by omelets. These are the offspring of Amish. These particular people are Mennonites, but in my fantasy, let's go with the fantasy, please. They're Amish, and therefore the children can be omelets. And the omelets duck and hide behind her voluminous skirts. This is my fantasy. And in my fantasy, I say this every time. Hello, I say, my name is Martin Sender, a sinner, yes, I said a sinner. I don't even own a hoe, I don't know how to make a garden, God help me, I eat cream puffs on the Sabbath, I'm just being honest with you. I bathe every day, I notice, with all due respect, you don't, or the omelets. I tumble dry my clothes, tumble dry. Of course, if you look at the Mennonite laundry line, it goes from here to Canada, and they have several weeks worth of clothing for 18 people strung up there, and they crank it out on a wheel. My confession to the Mennonist, and this is what I would call her, this is what I do call her in my fantasy, a Mennonist. That would just anger her, because, of course, the distinctions between men and women are to be hated. And I really do, in real life now, mourn the loss of the S added to things. You can't call a waitress anymore a waitress. That's very sexist. Oh, my God, and you're politically incorrect. It's a server or a serving person, and it's gender neutral. A male is a server, a female is a server. Same thing on an airplane. Oh, I love the days when the stewardess came by, and you could say, excuse me, stewardess, oh, don't do that today. It's a flight attendant, and it's gender neutral because we're politically correct and we have to erase gender distinctions, which is a tragedy. So I address the Mennonists, and I say, I eat cream puffs on the Sabbath. My dear woman, I bathe daily. I tumble dry my clothes. All this to illustrate the depths of my sin to her. Forgive me. Bear with me. Have mercy on my mustache. That's right. In my fantasy, I ask for mercy upon my mustache because, as you know, the Mennonites and the Amish, they have beards but no mustaches. I had a mustache. And that is a grave sin for which one imagines there is no recourse, not even from the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. I would continue to the Mennonists who enters the door. The omelets would be ducked behind her skirts. I would say, I have read your wonderful sign in your front yard for many months now, hoping to earn my way into heaven. God shows mercy to the merciful, says your wooden headline, and I thank you for that. You're good people. I'm not saying you're not. Thank you for trying to help me. You're a good people. You're a merciful people. You reach out to a sinning, mustached man such as myself, who has, by the way, never once baked a single loaf of bread or fertilized a carrot. This was a very specific fantasy of mine, very detailed. And my next statement would always be this in my fantasy. I said, may God, and I rehearsed this as I walked my 8 miles, may God have mercy upon your household, and may he curse mine in Hades, naturally, because that's where I belong, the unseen. And it's even better if I'm never seen again, your highness. I mean, your Mennonists. But before I depart for the underworld, I must know from a sanctified lip that has never been rouged or glossed, What happens to the rest? What happens to the unmerciful? At this point in my fantasy, I get a little forward. I lean a little bit. Maybe I take one toe and extend it into the house, into the sacred domicile, excuse me, of the Mennonists and the Omelets. The Mennonite, the male of the species, is not home. He is out fertilizing a carrot or baking a loaf of bread or hoeing a row. My question is, then it becomes more forceful. What happens to the unmerciful of our sorrowful race? What happens? Well, in my fantasy, the Mennonist humps. Yes, she humps. It's a hump. It's a holy hump that comes from deep behind her epiglottis. It goes like this. She can't help but making the hump a little bit feminine. Believe me, I will notice this. I will notice any little feminine nuance I can of the Mennonists. But it's a little deeper than that. That's it. At the same time, she humps at me. In my fantasy, she snatches up a fire pan and a golden snuffer from the altar of God next to her spatula rack. This is all part of the fantasy. She then bangs me with the fire pan while smiting me with the snuffer. She bangs me with a fire pan with her right hand after the holy hump, and she smites me. A bang and a smite. The bang comes from the right hand, the smite from the left hand, the bang with the fire pan, the smite with the snuffer. It hurts. It hurts, but I know I deserve it. It is my penance for driving a red car. That's what I deserve. She has, of course, may possibly seen me walking past her holy habitation, but she had probably never seen me driving my red car. But I do drive a red car, and this is a hideous sin to the Amish that you drive at all, let alone a red car. The Amish and the Mennonites will deign to occupy a vehicle, but it must be black. Unless it's black, we cannot go in it. Black is the color of depression. Black is the color of the inside of our nostrils. Black is the color of the inside of our bodies, which no one will ever see, or the outside for that matter. What happens after that when I grimace in pain at the striking and the smiting? Well, the Omelets, who have been gathered around the skirts of the Mennonists, they giggle. They bite me in the knees. Then they run away to play in their little Mount Sinai sandbox. That's right. The Omelets have a little Mount Sinai sandbox. It's a replica of the Sinai Desert, the main feature of which is a mound fashioned by the Mennonite, the Amite, the male of the species, to resemble Mount Sinai. Things look dim for me, even in the fantasy. I let that happen. I let things look dim for me in the fantasy. I'm willing to do it, you know. Not everything has to be pleasant. But alas, I shall not return to my home void. No, because the Mennonist answers my question. In the fantasy, she answers my question. And my question is, of course, what happens to the rest? After she humps, smites me, strikes me and smites me. And the Omelets giggle and run away to their Mount Sinai sandbox. She says, "The rest? The rest?" She is imitating her favorite Old Testament prophet at this time. As she says, "The rest," yeah, she kind of says it like that, "The rest." She says it a total of three times. Three, of course, being the number of perfection. And each time she says it is preceded by another holy hump. Three holy humps. Three, "The rest." And three more smites with the sacred snuffer. And each hump is more holier than the previous hump. And each smite is more sacred than the previous smite. Why, the rest are damned. Wait a minute. No, that's English. The rest are damned for eternity. She says, in hell, of course. Do you not know anything? That's how she finishes. Do you not know anything? And in comes the fire pan, again, to my forehead. And in spite of the ensuing headache, as you would imagine, I manage a smile. This is a fantasy. In real life, I probably could not work this up. But in the fantasy, I smile. And the meninist intends to send me away happy. Because she's a holy person. And she does. She concludes her sermon. The rest go to hell for eternity. She concludes her sermon with a kick to my buttock area and a verse from the book of Exodus, chapter 38, verse 22. This is a very specific fantasy, which verse reads, now Bezaleel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, made all that the Lord had commanded Moses. And on the heels of they will go to hell for eternity, she says to me with one last hump from deep behind her epiglottis, go thou and doest likewise. With the slam of the door, my fantasy sadly ends. And I have not even received a gardening tip. You may think there's a happy ending to this story. You're probably hoping there's an ending, period. Oh no. It's one more episode. Because back now to that famous day. It was just past noon. And my fantasies not only dissolved, but they died. Because in place of the sign that said, God is merciful to the merciful, God has mercy on the merciful, what is a new sign that was made of even heavier wood? And what that sign said, yo, are not going to believe.